Voluntary assisted dying advocates continue calls for further reform following the Victorian government's 5-year review of its VAD Act to improve access and equity. The state led the charge on laws in 2017 and implemented them in 2019, setting a national precedent, seeing other states adopt their own VAD legislation. But the landscape around VAD in Australia continues to evolve, with the Northern Territory being the latest jurisdiction to introduce legislation to legalise it. To hear more, The Wire's Emma Watsky was joined by a panel from Dying with Dignity Victoria about much-needed changes in the state.
Hi, my name's Dr. Nick Carr. I'm a GP in St Kilda and a board member of Dying with Dignity Victoria.
I am Tara McDonald. I'm a young ambassador with Dying with Dignity Victoria, and I'm based in North Melbourne.
And I'm Eve Crotty. I'm also a young ambassador with Dying with Dignity Victoria, and I'm based over in eastern Melbourne.
Thank you so much. Dr. Carr, I understand you were one of the first GPs in Victoria trained to provide voluntary assisted dying care since the implementation of laws in 2019. What has been your experience or observation with the current frameworks in Victoria for voluntary assisted dying access over the last 5 years?
Well, I suppose the short answer is it's actually worked very well for the relatively small number of people who've made the choice to use voluntary assisted dying. The experience that I've had, which I think is replicated by pretty much everyone involved in VAD care, is that for that group of people who are suffering with horrible terminal illness, the people who've chosen the option of voluntary assisted dying get an enormous sense of relief. One of the things is it's about wresting back that little bit of control at the end of their lives when these revolting diseases have robbed them of pretty much all autonomy and control over what's happening to them. The people who have used it, our experience has really pretty much uniformly been that voluntary assisted dying deaths have been peaceful, calm, beautiful is the word that keeps getting used. So it hasn't been used by a lot of people, but for those that have used it, it's been very effective.
I understand that Victorian legislation included a gag clause prohibiting health professionals from initiating conversations on VAD as an option, where conversations could really only be initiated by the patient. What do you believe is the importance of health practitioners being able to initiate these conversations around VAD and end of life? Should patients be more empowered to engage in these conversations or end of life options?
So the gag clause was put in place because there was this idea that we terrible doctors would be persuading people that they should take voluntary assisted dying medications rather than have treatment, which frankly is a rather insulting view of the medical profession. What it's actually done is meant that the most literate, the most news-informed, the most educated people who know about voluntary assisted dying know to come and ask doctors. But there's a big group of people who may be disadvantaged by the gag clause, which may be people whose language is less fluent in English, maybe people with lower literacy or education rates who don't know to come and ask. And I've had this experience where I've seen people with really, really unpleasant diseases who may be facing some pretty brutal treatment. And I want to say to them, do you know that this is an option? But I can't tell them. And I have had people who've gone through treatments which I'm pretty sure they may not have chosen if they had known that voluntary assisted dying was an option. And it's now a medically available treatment. It is the only medical treatment where we are told we cannot advise people of their right to use it. It's only applying at the moment in Victoria and South Australia. It doesn't apply in the rest of the states. It has to go.
And since the rollout of these VAD laws, I understand that around 1,282 Victorians have successfully accessed VAD services. I'm aware that many more were eligible but have not been able to access the service due to barriers. What have been the impacts of these?
So when the law was passed in 2017 and it was implemented in 2019, there were 68 safeguards put in place, and this was partly because that was the only way it was going to get voted in. And some of those safeguards have turned out to be barriers. One of the criteria is that you have to be an Australian citizen. It's not good enough just to have lived here. My very first voluntary assisted dying patient had pancreatic cancer, and he turned out to be a UK citizen. He had a British passport, and so he wasn't eligible. It was devastating. He lived in this country for over 40 years. He paid his taxes. He could vote, but he wasn't eligible for voluntary assisted dying. And Julian suicided on his own because he couldn't access voluntary assisted dying. So one of the changes that we would like to see in Victoria is that you don't have to have formal citizenship in the country. There are other barriers. The prognosis clause, less than 6 months, can be a barrier. We know that doctors often don't tell you you've only got 6 months until you've got less than 6 weeks. A lot of people have come to us too late. We'd like to see the prognosis clause extended. And this big group of people who are at the end of their lives, we call these people with their completed life. And I've been consulted by a lot of people who said, I want voluntary assisted dying. I'm in my late 80s. I've got arthritis, diabetes. I can't see. I can't hear. I've done my time. They don't have a terminal illness. So that group of people plus the group of people with early stages of dementia, these are two groups who are currently excluded from voluntary assisted dying. Hopefully in the future, we may be able to see an extension that can include them as well.
Eve, I understand that your mother accessed VAD. If you don't mind sharing, what was her situation and experience and perhaps some of the challenges around eligibility criteria?
So Mum had end-stage renal failure and also suffered from various other severe debilitating chronic health conditions, including diabetes mellitus and gastrointestinal issues. Her experience accessing voluntary assisted dying was actually quite easy. At the start, we were very lucky to be able to get into contact with various nephrologists who were voluntary assisted dying trained. She had access to renal dialysis, which essentially was, I wouldn't necessarily call it a treatment, which is a life-prolonging procedure that has to be continuously done so that the person can remain alive. Whilst Mum had all of her other conditions, she didn't feel a huge rush in needing to access voluntary assisted dying. She wanted to have as much control over her life and her death as possible, and she believed the voluntary assisted dying would allow her that. The initial application to access voluntary assisted dying was quite smooth. However, upon her final application, we received 9 weeks of almost radio silence from the Voluntary Assisted Dying Review Board and the State Secretary of Health as to her final decision if she were to be approved or denied access to voluntary assisted dying. We still don't know exactly why there was a 9-week delay in a final decision. We believe it was likely due to the eligibility criteria within the Victorian Voluntary Assisted Dying legislation specifying that for her and her qualification that she would need to have a 6-month prognosis period. Whilst initially it was positive, it became an underlying anxiety for her. If we were to have received word from the Voluntary Assisted Dying Review Board that Mum was not allowed to access renal dialysis before applying for voluntary assisted dying, Mum would not have survived the minimum period requirement between first and final application and distribution of the medication. It's not an easy thing to put such a hefty request forward to the review board and to put a request forward to the State Secretary of Health asking for assistance in dying. Prior to applying for voluntary assisted dying, Mum was not keen on accessing palliative in the home. She was almost at a loss for what options were available to her. And then once we found out about voluntary assisted dying, she knew that was what she wanted to do because of her almost lifelong illnesses that took away any control and any quality of life from her.
Thank you so much for sharing that very personal account. Reflecting on the journey, how important do you believe that choice around timing is, and what did it mean knowing that your mother did have the freedom to choose to end suffering in the context of her illness?
Once Mum received final approval to access voluntary assisted dying, and more so from the point that the medication was distributed, which she said was actually one of the easiest parts of the entire process, I saw a version of my mother that I hadn't seen since I was a little girl. I knew her for 19 years of my life, and most of those 19 years was spent assisting her, looking after her, but also watching her suffer. And unfortunately, that withering was prolonged due to the 9-week wait. But once she received the green light, she regained energy and she regained a purpose in her life to be there for her family because she had a way out and because she had a way out that she knew was controlled. In her mind, dignified death and the perfect death for her compared to what other options. So those 19 years seeing a very ill side of my mother and a mother who was deteriorating quite rapidly, it gave me so much comfort to be able to know that she was able to pass away, accessing voluntary assisted dying and passing away on her terms and in a place that she wanted to be with people that she wanted to be around. It was myself, my father and her and her nephrologist were there, and it was tranquil and peaceful at best because we knew that she wasn't suffering anymore. We knew that her illness and pain couldn't take anything more from her than it already had done. It allowed her to be free from illness and from her extremely diminished quality of life. And it was something that I will take with me forever because I think it was something so courageous for her to do and something so empowering as well to be able to do. Whilst we were internally grateful that she was allowed to access voluntary assisted dying, the fight really to get to that point was definitely shows issues prevalent in the current voluntary assisted dying legislation.
Tara, since the rollout of these laws, how have you come to understand the importance of young Victorians as a necessary part of the VAD picture?
Young people are really important in the picture of VAD because people over 18 can access VAD. It's not an old person's thing. It's an adult thing. In Victoria, you are an adult when you are 18. Although the number of people that are accessing VAD as a young person is lower, by having people involved, it ensures a long-term sustainability and improvement into the legislations that are available now and into the future. Young people are also advocating for not only themselves, but also for their loved ones. Often we find that young people are more likely to be inquisitive or have the drive to investigate options for themselves. And they will also do that for their loved ones. And so perhaps, like Eve, there might be somebody who is supporting a loved one who is terminally ill. And because of the gag clause, nobody knows about voluntary assisted dying. But if they are able to go and research it, or they are able to be involved in it and understand what it's all about, they can have the conversation with their loved ones. We prefer that not to be the case, but right now it has to be. As young people, we want to continue to improve VAD for our loved ones and ourselves in the future.
When it comes to sort of informing policies and making reforms, reshaping the future, what would you offer in terms of young perspectives as well, in terms of reshaping the legislation?
Young people are going to inherit whatever is now. We want to be involved in that policy because we don't know when we're going to get a chance to change this. We need to make sure that the policies around voluntary assisted dying are something that they're at least thinking about. And so we need to have advocates like Eve and myself to make sure that that's happening. We also have a different perspective. I think it's also important to note that young people are experiencing voluntary assisted dying as a witness, but it also changes what they want for their future. Nick mentioned before things like dementia and other things that are currently are not eligible for voluntary assisted dying, but people are supporting their loved ones to pass away. My dad personally took 16 days to pass away. He didn't eat or drink or pass any waste for 16 days, and nobody could do anything about it. As a person that's witnessed that, I don't want that for myself. It's important that we have a voice in policy to make sure that our choices in the future aren't that. And so I don't have to watch my daughter, or I don't have to think about my daughter having to experience what I did.
Victoria was the first to implement laws, with most other states following. The Northern Territory are currently debating, with opposition to it citing concerns around cost and cultural values. What lessons do you think Victoria offers other jurisdictions? And now, what can Victoria learn from states and overseas countries that have perhaps improved or expanded on the frameworks?
Victoria, of course, was at the vanguard because we were the first state to pass the legislation, and now that it's gone through in all the other states and ACT, and hopefully will go through in Northern Territory in the not too distant future, really we are the laggards now because our legislation has a lot of restrictions which some of the other states have got rid of. What the other states have learned from us is that some of the safeguards that were put in place in Victoria have actually turned out to be barriers to the effective working of voluntary assisted dying, and they've got rid of some of those barriers, such as the gag clause, which only applies in Victoria and South Australia. What I would hope is that the Northern Territory will look at all of the experiences in the other states and the ACT and say, all right, let's put in the best of what they've got and ditch some of the things that have been a problem. And hopefully here in Victoria, we're about to do the same with the review of the legislation.
I think sometimes the states of Australia and the ACT are really keen to keep up with the rest of the world when it comes to different legislations. And I think voluntary assisted dying is no different. But I also think that we need to keep in mind that we also are a different culture to other places. But in essence, we are all humans. And yes, there are some parts of legislation overseas that are very different to what we have. And some people feel hesitant to assess changes or consider changes to legislation because of things they hear about overseas. And they're worried that, you know, Australia might get to that point. It's like, I don't think that that's a fair argument, because we are still in the early stages of this legislation. But the really important thing to remember is, because it's early, we can grow and we can change and we can learn. And these changes or reforms for Victoria give us the opportunity to really reflect on all the great stuff that we've done over the past 5 years, but to also look at the things that we can improve.
Eve, reflecting on your own experience, I'm aware that a series of reforms have been accepted by the Victorian government. They're set to make further reforms to make access fairer. What changes do you believe are most necessary?
Well, as exposed by the five-year review, there are indeed various choke points riddled throughout the current legislation. Personally, I would love to see a removal of a prognosis requirement, or at least the extension to 12 months. I'm not too sure in my mother's case if that really would have helped the situation, but for so many out there, prognosis requirements can be such a huge barrier, as prognosis is not definite. From my understanding, in South Australia, there is a definite decision. Someone who applies for voluntary assisted dying can also be accessing life prolonging procedures such as renal dialysis. I would love for that definite decision to be made here, especially amongst the new or the proposed reforms and hopefully the passing reforms as well. I think as well, something I believe Dying with Dignity Victoria has proposed is an addition of compassionate exemptions for access. With the 9-week wait that mum had in order to access voluntary assisted dying, we did not feel that it truly allowed the legislation to fulfill the meaning and the purpose of the legislation. Introducing a compassionate exemption along with extension of prognosis requirement certainly may help others in similar cases and circumstances to my mother in order to be able to more smoothly access voluntary assisted dying or face and less impactful barriers that will prolong one's life, but not only that, will prolong one's suffering as well.
With the gag clause, if doctors can't talk about it, often what I was saying before around younger people can look into it. That's true. But if you then put emotion and heart into that, you have situations where young people will say, well, I know about this, but I don't want to tell my parent about it or my loved one about it because I don't want them to choose it. If you remove the gag clause, it removes that sense of heavy-heartedness that can also go on to carers or younger people or spouses. Imagine telling somebody that you have an opportunity for them to end their suffering, but essentially it means you have to say goodbye to them and you don't know if you want to do that. And some people can't make that decision and some people decide not to make that decision, and therefore the gag clause continues to stay in place for that person who is suffering tremendously.
One of the things I really want to emphasise is that nobody quite knew what was going to happen when the law was implemented in 2019 in Victoria. There was a lot of scaremongering that you would have disabled people would be treated poorly, that they would maybe be coerced into having voluntary assisted dying, nursing homes were going to be emptied, and all sorts of terrible ideas like this. And none of that has happened. I mean, the reality is the vast majority of the population, including most people are towards the end of their lives, nothing has changed. For a very small group of people for whom voluntary assisted dying is an option they want to pursue, they've been given the comfort and the option of a new process, which has turned out to be very effective.
The Wise Emma Watsky with the report.